Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can all go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to watch movies and series and talk about them with my friends that work here. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV? Good morning, guys.
Hi there.
Good morning.
How is everybody?
Well, I'm fine. I'm good. It's a good Monday.
It is. It feels like a good Monday.
It feels like a good Monday.
All right, we've got Kolski here.
Hey.
Kolski in the morning.
Hey, guys.
And we got P-Dog.
Yes.
What the fuck, P-Dog?
Yeah.
Have you never heard that?
Really? Like, they would always call me that. I get called P-Dog, P-Unit, Peanut.
Oh, my word.
Peanuts, nice.
Peanuts, good.
P-Dizzle, okay, Parisi, Peronaise.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. Peronaise. Fucking oh, that's love lovely. Peronaise. Yeah.
Now, if we're going to go with high school or university nicknames, you guys have to call me Cabbage. That's how it goes.
Okay. Cabbage.
Right. It's coleslaw.
No.
Coleslaw.
Okay.
Why have I never thought of that?
Hello, everyone. Hi. And welcome to the video store. Thank you for wandering into our video store. Today is the Clerks episode. So it's myself, Perrin, and Cole, and we are going to catch up and talk about the TV shows and the movies that we've been watching in the last week or so. We're here to help you figure out what you can watch, but I also want to catch up with my choms. So just before we get too into it, I just want to mention the fact that next week we're going to take a break, just for 1 week.
Okay. Cool.
I am leaving for Amsterdam.
What are you doing in Amsterdam?
It's an interesting story. Yeah. About many months ago, Leslie, who's my fiancé, her best friend offered her a ticket to Taylor Swift.
Oh, no. Cool.
And so they've been planning it for months. And so I'm going with just to keep her company.
Wow.
I've been to Amsterdam a few times.
So
I'm
you're not going
enough.
To watch the Eras tour?
I'm not going to be there, unfortunately. Those tickets are just phenomenally expensive. And also, if I now were to try and find a ticket, I would be far away from them.
Yeah.
So it's just not seeming possible that
that
I'm
going
to be there. But Les is going to go and watch Taylor
Swift. She's stoked.
Oh, yeah. She's planned her sparkly shoes
it's
and everything.
It's so crazy. Like, I met a guy recently. Well, I didn't meet him. I saw him again after a few years. And he's a professional Pokemon player. And he travels all over the world to play.
Just the fact that you get to say that you do that.
And he was in Brazil, I think, for a tournament. And like his friend was like, oh, Taylor Swift's in town in Sao Paulo. And he's like, let's go watch. He's like, okay.
Well, you should. Those things all should sell out. It's amazing that he then.
Do you know how much he paid for his ticket? He paid 400 rand for it. They bought it from a dodgy like third party guy.
But then it could be fake, though.
They were worried. They got to the front of the line and... like, because the language barrier is like hectic, so they go to the front of the line. They're like, also, they only paid $400 for it,
so it's fine.
They get there, they hand the ticket. They spent 6 hours on a bus to get there, right?
Jesus. Fucking
so all. They got there, they spent an hour in the line, they handed the tickets, and a big X popped up on the screen. They were like, fuck, okay, it's not gonna work. And the person was speaking to him in Portuguese, they're like, oh shit, we don't understand you. And then his friend came over. He's like, oh, you're at the wrong gate. You have to go to the south gate.
Jesus.
And they got there and they got in. And like, there was general standing. They said it was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. 400 rand, eh?
Wow. Yes. So we're going away. And you know what? I just want to take a little break.
Yeah.
So it just makes sense that just for a week that the video store closes. We've just finished Encounters here at the Bioscope, which always happens in late June. And so for me, that's always the half year mark. Once we get through Encounters, which is usually this really fun, busy, crazy, intense, you know, week or 10 days, it's quite nice to take a break. So we're going to take a break just for 1 week as the video store. So please don't venture too far away. And we'll hopefully see you again soon in that regard. But we've got one more episode this week coming out, which is a guest episode that happens on Thursdays when we've got a good guest to share with you guys. And this week it is going to be Brian and Asher, who are very remarkable dudes. They are not only actors and filmmakers and own this incredible production company, but they have recently been making... or owning the company, Do Us Wine.
Oh, our sponsors.
Which have sponsored us. And it's a very exciting, very cool business and venture. But you really, yeah, it's going to be a very special episode because there is so much more to Brian and Asher. And it's going to be revealed over the course of the chat because you'll realize where these guys have popped up and where you've seen them and what they've done. And they're it's going to join some dots for you, which is
amazing,
which is really fun. And they're just lovely dudes. So it's going to be a great episode. Okay, before we get too into this, guys, I just want to make a quick announcement for everyone that's browsing the aisles. I'm just going to press this little button over here.
Attention all customers, this is to let you know that the 45th Durban International Film Festival is coming. It's presented by the Center for the Creative Arts at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, and it will take place from the 18th to the 28th of July. It is the oldest and the largest film festival in Southern Africa, presenting over 100 screenings, all of which are premieres in this region. And it's going to be over a bunch of different venues. There's Suncoast Cine Centre, New Metro Pavilion, and the Ster Kennicol and Gateway. Tickets are 80 Rand, and they can be purchased through each cinema's website.
We are then also going to do something with the Bioscope later. Let's get a quick little rundown. What's going on? What's happening? Perrin, you were at a wedding last night.
I was at a wedding last night.
A wedding on a Sunday.
It was a Jewish wedding. It was an absolute rager. I forget how hard they go at weddings.
I could tell you.
The horror was fucking mental.
I could tell you how they go at weddings because we once had one happening next door to us. We stay in an apartment block, so, you know, noise just travels upwards.
Yeah.
And there was a fucking rager of one. And I was like, it's a Sunday.
Yeah.
Who the fuck gets married on a Sunday?
And day then, is God's day.
Yeah.
Please, you know.
I guess God wants
God
you to...
parties on his day off.
Yeah, he wants
Hashem parties on his day off.
Yeah. The horror is amazing, right?
Yeah, dude. Like, it's basically a mosh pit.
So you were telling me, you were teaching me the move outside. So it's basically like what Jack Dawson and Rose do in Titanic.
Yeah, but way harder.
Really?
They just spin like crazy. Like they lock each other in.
Yes.
And normally the guys do that. So there's two horrors. There'll be like one with all the boys being like, oh, boys, you know, like mosh pitting and like jumping over rows of men lying on the floor for some reason.
Yeah, that's like, they do like a kind of evil Knievel
move. Dude, someone always gets hurt, like severely hurt. And the woman one, it's more like, chilled, but they still go hard, you know. They put people on the chairs and they like carry them around. They do horrors at bar mitzvahs as well. Like,
I think I've seen it before.
Yeah,
in videos,
it's like a movie you're watching. You're like, I've seen this in some movie.
I've seen this somewhere before.
Titanic, namely, they're all Jewish and Titanic.
What makes
Rose Finkelstein? You know,
what makes
it's terrible.
What makes the horror special and why it is so cool is when it is in the wedding.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So normal weddings, you get comfier and comfier as you go, and all the pretense is usually broken after the after the ceremony, after the speeches. Only then there's the daddy daughter dance.
Yeah.
Then there's the first dance, and then you start getting loose.
No,
Jewish weddings.
They start immediately, like
as the reception starts.
Yeah.
So you usually like
what?
You've just come from the ceremony.
Yeah.
They break the ice immediately.
They literally start dancing straight away.
Straight away. Yeah. And it's so fucking smart.
It is so smart
because then the rest of the night is an absolute jaw. So when you get to the speeches, everyone's
but then the
more rowdy.
Are like a homework. You're like, oh.
No, but everyone's broken in,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so
for sure.
No one's stuffy. The emotions just go wild. It's great.
Yeah, no, Jewish weddings rule, dude. They're really fun. Like,
and whenever
fun.
I see like videos of that stuff, I always think to myself, as this white English South African that has no culture.
Yeah.
It's like there's nothing there.
Well, remember with the Rugby World Cup,
you
see folks like in Monte Cassino, now that we have transformed, now that there are black players, they're black fans.
Yeah.
So like when you're in Monte Cassino and dudes take to the streets, the fake streets, because we would just happen to be in Monte Cassino. Do you remember myself and Cole? We watched it together.
We watched the Mexican trap.
We watched it in Monte Cassino.
After my show.
Yeah.
The audience, the fans, were going through the streets singing like beautifully. And I was like, what do we have as whiteys?
Nothing.
Nothing.
No, there's no culture. So that's when I watched Jewish, like any kind of Jewish folk music.
Yeah.
I honestly think it's the best folk music in the world. Like whatever you hear, it's like, this is, A, it's fun. Yeah. It's fun music.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it's fun to party to, fun to sing.
But yeah, dude, like the English,
and it's rich with like history and heritage.
But
it's beautiful.
That, like all music, like and like languages in that region, so like Arabic, you know, Hebrew.
Oh, the Levant.
Yeah, even like further to like Iran, sign like Farsi and all that stuff. The languages are so beautiful, and they have like 20 different words for the word love, and like you know, like it's like in English, it's like. Love. We have one word. Love. You know, like, that's so lame. So
as opposed to us South Africans, we're a schmarky. Maybe a schmarky is totally different. As a band, I was when I first joined Short Straw, I was introduced to the word bonch, which was...
Wow, I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah. And I was like, what is bonch when you want to bonch a chick?
Oh, my God.
Okay. No, but this is important. It was like... It was important to stipulate the fact that it's sex with a little bit more love, like it's somewhere between a pump
passion.
and love making. So it's like it's a little good, bit of a healthy... dirty deed, but it's got love in it. There was like a subtlety to how it, and I was like, okay,
but not too much, just
not
a
too
touch,
much,
you know,
just enough to make it endearing.
Yeah, totally.
But then just enough to make
bonch.
It like
so. Bonch is the best sex ever.
Well, it's perhaps the best of both worlds.
Yeah, it's not quite there yet. You know, it's like, good, you know?
But I just love the subtle. Well, yeah. I bring it up as
not enough love making.
It's got some heart.
Me,
you
it's
know?
Got a, it's got some subtlety in it.
Yeah.
It's dreadful.
It is dreadful, but it's at least got a little bit of love in it.
You guys were talking about love and love in different languages. Yeah. Made me think of Celine Dion. So I watched a documentary on Prime Video.
My God. I was finished.
Yeah, dude. And she always is looking at her children like it's a candid walking through her home and her saying, shit them, to her children, saying, I love you all the time.
Yeah.
And it just sounded so beautiful coming from a mother. I haven't seen that before, like candid... like French documentary, I don't know.
Yeah.
But her just speaking French with her children, stunning. But
yeah,
god damn it, that's a tough watch, dude.
That was a
I think it's like not a good documentary, but the story, seeing her seeing a woman or a musician rather being denied the use of their instruments, and especially her being denied. It happened in The Bear. I was watching The Bear season 3 last night, which I'd also love to talk about.
Yeah.
And there was a scene where this person was talking about, you know, when you see those people in the world and they are good at that thing and they love it so much, and then they do it and you can see that they're the best in the world at it. Like, I hate those people.
Yeah.
And obviously I think they're talking about Jeremy Allen White's character.
And
just talks specifically about Celine Dion. What happened again?
So I'll get to that. Sorry. Yeah, it's true. I need to explain that context. But it's like that, watching Celine, right? Whenever you see her in interviews, she just embodies a love for singing like no one else, dude. She's
passion.
Incredible. So 17 years ago, I think they said in the documentary, she was diagnosed with SPS or stiff person syndrome. Mm. So it's basically, they said in the documentary, it's your muscles rebelling against your body. It's a neurological disorder.
Okay.
So your muscles start to go into spasm. Yeah. She's had broken ribs before, like because the muscles spasm in such a way that they... You know,
so she's been living with it for a long time,
and
the public perhaps doesn't know about this.
Yeah, yeah, so she had to cancel her Vegas residency because she can't sing anymore, like at the level she used to. Yeah,
but I think for a long time, from what I'm now piecing together, is that she had it and perhaps nobody really knew. But it then became news when this condition now stopped her from singing.
Yeah, I think people were also very mean about, like, that's the great thing about the documentary is that, like, what I really liked about it, I agree with you, it's not like a particularly...
Sure, but let's talk about the stories and the people.
Yeah.
That's, I'm more interested in that than
that's
the craft
of
the documentary.
That's where I'm going, right? So
exactly.
Like, what makes the documentary special is because it's so intimate, it's so raw, and normally when you have movies or documentaries or reality shows or whatever about celebrities of that caliber, where they're like icons, right? Mm. They tend to... not want to show the realness of the things that they're struggling with.
Because, yeah, they sanitize it.
Yeah, because they want people to still see them as these, like, fucking, almost like deities, you know?
Sure,
right?
Sure.
This, like, there's so many heartbreaking moments in this movie. And I watched it me and Kira like to watch a lot of these documentaries together, but I watched it before because I'm like, I don't think she'll be into it because she's going to be devastated the whole way through. There's a line where she's like weepy and she's like, I thought I was actually really good. And that broke me.
Oh, yeah. Like, I thought I was good. I thought I gave the world was good. God. And it's like, it's over.
And that's like 10 minutes into the movie.
Yeah.
Okay, then, but what has since happened? Can she still sing now?
She's going through a lot of physical therapy. Yeah. And they show the work that she's doing with a physical therapist every single day.
Okay. But so she can speak.
There's a film called Love Again.
Yeah.
Okay. I saw the trailer for it where Celine Dion's a featured character.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's a bit cheesy.
Okay. So they show her recording the song for that movie, and they show one day where she like sings it and she asks for a couple takes because she can't like find the right placement.
Yeah.
The next day she comes back, she listens to it, and you can hear it. I was also like,
yeah,
it's not there. It's not the same
thing. Straight up, she's like, I don't like it. I hate it. Please,
so let's try it again. And then she goes again for it on the second day, and then you can see her having like a blast listening to herself, like getting the right nuances and the phrases and everything. And then she goes to sit down on a therapy bed.
Yes,
with her therapist.
That is one of the hardest things I've ever
seen. And then she looks at her foot and she's like, well, I just spasmed. Which means it could be the start of a seizure. And then she full on goes into a seizure, and they like film the entire thing. It's like they don't cut it. Yeah, it's 12 minutes and they don't cut away from it.
Ugh,
and there's this moment where I thought of, is it Edvard Munch who painted the screen? Who painted the screen?
I think it is Munch.
Yeah. I like, there's a moment where you see her face stuck in a spasm and her eyes locked in like pain.
Yeah.
And she can't move screaming. And she's just like,
yeah.
And you just sit there and you're like, Jesus Christ, I can't believe what I'm watching. Because then the spasm starts to lift and then she starts to wail.
Yeah.
But she still can't move her body, but her voice works.
What a crazy thing to get on film. Yeah.
It's insane, dude. But it's like the fact that she allowed us to see that. So it's like, this is why she can't perform. And she even talks about the fact that in previous performances, they had to cancel in line. She cries when she says, I lied about why I couldn't sing. It was a nasal infection because it's one in a million people that get this thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's Celine, you know? You can't say the reason she can't perform is she can't sing.
Yeah.
That's weird.
There's one thing, there's one thing that they said was like a news audio, like over footage. And it's so true. In the medical world, you don't want to be a rarity because likelihood of...
There's no precedent. There's no ways to...
It's just...
How do you heal it?
Yeah, it's just... It's called I Am Celine Dion, and it's on Prime Video, and it's brand new. It came out this last week, and I've never been into Celine Dion's music, but I respected how incredible a vocalist she is.
Fuck you, Rolling Stone.
Yeah, I was literally about to say.
What did Rolling Stone say?
They not put her on their top
500.
Was it 50? I think it was 50.
Oh, yeah.
Or 100. I don't know.
It was
their
big
top
list.
Vocalists of all time.
Oh, fuck off.
Yeah. So, like, that movie, it's just...
That just undermines Rolling Stone.
Yeah. And like you said, you know, you don't care about the craft of something. You care about the story of something.
Sometimes. Well, with documentary...
It has to be raw, right?
Because the skill of documentary was getting that access.
It's capturing.
The skill was earning her trust to be in that room.
That's a good point.
You've crafted the best edit,
it,
to me, is irrelevant. You were allowed to film that.
She watched that
and she said, that's okay. Your subject trusted you to make this documentary.
That's what I respect about the documentary is after watching it, I appreciate her way more because I'm like, she's actually fucking incredible. It's actually a tragedy that she can't do what she loves. I mean, that line of like, I used to be good. And like she says, I miss music.
Yeah,
like,
I miss the crowd.
That's her life.
That's the energy. This is all making me think about something else, which I'd love to talk about, is the Nickelback documentary.
Really?
Oh, I saw that.
Which is on Netflix. Love to Hate.
Brand new.
Yeah, also came out this last weekend.
Ooh,
look
at this photograph, eh?
It's very interesting.
Really?
It is very interesting because... There is so much to Nickelback, and this documentary is also just playing with that, where this band's like, we love this, and people have this, you know, they love what they're doing.
Mm.
This documentary also has you realize just how fucking successful this band was.
Oh yeah,
and how they came huge. From nothing, and how they were this kind of grassroots, but they just got so famous. And the timing is also interesting, that they existed at their peak just as social media was taking hold, where the concept of a meme was being invented.
Yeah.
You know, where people had a voice that they didn't have before. You forget context.
Yeah, for sure.
And so at the heart of this band comes the fact that they were one of the more hated bands. And I'm putting that in brackets. And it's because they weren't actually hated. They were just used as the poster people for this kind of ridicule. Someone had to be the band that you sort of make fun of. And it was just because perhaps their songs were so middle of the road, but there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
and they were great, and they were heartfelt, and they were well-written, successful songs.
Yeah,
so it's so interesting to see the success and the way that like the band members are talking about how like their kids were teased at school, and the guitarist even said to his son, just like, you don't have to stick up for us, like just do whatever you need to like fit in. Like, don't, you know, you don't have to stick up for us. It's so interesting that they had to deal with this.
Yeah. No, I remember they still are universally hated quite a bit.
Well, it's like, it's one of those interesting things to unpack, because I don't actually think they're that hated because they are so successful
but
they are so loved.
There's a weird resurgence of like Gen Zers. I don't know if they ironically are liking these post-grunge bands. Where it's like Creed and Hoobastank.
One of the worst bands. It has to be ironic.
One of the worst band names ever, Hoobastank.
It is. Yeah. It's horrible.
Bro, I think we should call ourselves Hoobastank. What the fuck is that?
It's got stank in it. The Hoobah part is okay, but it's the stank.
The stank
really
is very early 2000s.
I really
like 2002. Yeah.
I really liked Hoobastank. There was a time in my life where I was like, this is a great band. That one song got played to absolute death.
Yeah.
And that was also what broke them in the more mainstream, because it actually was a very slow song.
Yeah.
But the rest of it, like, it was pretty hardcore, like pretty heavy stuff. Relatively.
Did you also have a chain attached to your wallet? And
well, yes, that's coming back.
I think I actually want that again.
Because I always lose my wallet.
I always lose my wallet. Exactly.
Well, it's more like pickpocketers in Joburg. Yeah. Maybe it's, you know,
it's not a bad idea.
It's
guys.
Not a bad idea. No, but I was talking to someone over the weekend who's got a daughter who's kind of on the cusp of like 12, 13, 14. And he's like, they are dressing like we did.
Dude, and the 90s are back. It's crazy.
Yeah, but it's so interesting.
Early 2000s.
But sometimes you need a little bit of time. And so it was great to look back on that era.
Yeah.
Because you realize that is a long time ago now.
Mm.
When Nickelback and How You Remind Me, you know, came to be.
You remind me of everything.
It's very, yeah, jams, it's exactly. Dude. What it's same as Creed. The two sort of sang similarly.
Oh,
it was a style, right?
Post Eddie Vedder.
Post Eddie Vedder.
Yeah.
You, speaking of Celine, talking about having to lie.
Yeah.
Right? Lie to the audience. Had me realize about something I really want to chat to you guys about.
Yeah.
Which is the Milli Vanilli biopic.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So about a week ago, 2 weeks ago, we went to the premiere of it. It's called Girl, You Know It's True.
Girl, You Know It's True. Ooh.
Which is...
I love you. Sorry.
So
I don't even know what we're talking about.
Okay. So like, do you
Milli
know...
Milli Vanilli? What?
You don't know Milli Vanilli?
No.
Wow. Okay. All right. I was hoping that perhaps you didn't.
Okay.
Because... a little bit like the Celine Dion documentary.
Yeah.
This isn't necessarily the world's greatest film, okay? This is the biopic about this group, Milli Vanilli. But because the acting's a little cheesy and like some of it's a bit like on the nose, but it is the most fascinating story in the history of music.
Yeah.
Okay? It's arguably the biggest scandal.
Yeah, music
that
history.
The music history has ever had.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
That's so crazy. Yeah.
Cut to 1980s Germany. A producer who is involved in like Boney M.
Yeah.
And Boney M itself was a very manufactured band.
Yeah, disco.
Disco done for the sake. And I don't think people really even know they were German or they sort of came out of Germany.
Yeah, yeah.
But They stumble across these two very handsome mixed race dudes.
Yeah.
Okay. So they got long dreads, handsome models, okay? They're dancing at a club. And they realize that these two could be perfect like pop stars.
Yeah.
So they recruit them in and sign them to the record label. But they've already got the song worked out. They've already got the song like basically recorded. And these guys are like, cool, we're going to be singers. How do we sing? Yeah. When do we start? When do we record?
Yeah.
And the guy's like, no, don't worry. Like, it's done. And they're like, what do you mean? We haven't sung.
Yeah.
And they embark on this project where the world thinks that they're the singers.
And they're the biggest act on the planet.
You then come to realize, because I knew that they were famous, okay, but it was a bit before my time, because this is late 80s, early 90s. Yeah. So I was born in 85. So I couldn't even hold my head up when they were when they were doing it, and it snowballed to the point where at one point they even won Best New Artist at the Grammys.
Yeah, which is one of the most controversial wins.
Because it's the only time when they've actually had to give back a Grammy.
Yeah.
Because basically, as you know from the story, and then what eventually comes out, is this producer says, these guys never sang a word.
Yeah.
They've been lip syncing the whole time.
Yeah.
Wild.
And the world felt deceived.
Yeah.
And record labels and everyone in their team kind of didn't go, oh yeah, we're sorry, we were in on it. They sort of pretended like they didn't know. And these guys fucked out.
Yeah.
But you forget how absolutely famous they were. And there was a couple of people in the audience of the screening who were a little bit older than me, and they were like, you don't understand. They were huge.
Yeah,
they were
massive.
Huge, huge, huge. And then the one guy, shout out to Costa, who's quite a famous comedian, who was in the audience, he was like, I then didn't care.
Yeah,
because for me, the music was so good.
Yeah,
that it didn't bother me.
Blame It on the Rain is a fucking banger.
Blame It on the Rain, and there was this other song called "Girl, Don't Forget My Number." And this movie, they use that as an opportunity for you to see just again who the people they use that song's recording in the movie to show you who the people were actually were recording these songs. Because they were doing this back in Germany, while these guys were sort of touring the world, and it's interesting because this is a biopic made by the people involved. So there was a woman who was the assistant to this main producer. Her name was Millie.
Yeah, they named and
half of the name of the band was named after this Millie. Millie is one of the executive producers. Or one of the producers of Girl, You Know It's True, the biopic.
Oh, really?
And the surviving member, because there were these two handsome guys. One was called Rob. And the other thing, Cole, just to remember,
is
that these are brown dudes in Germany in the
80s. Yeah, they're like
so like they were a bit exoticized in the sense that they were these kind of like handsome brown guys in Europe where there were not a lot of other brown guys in Europe. When they then got to the States and they started talking, everyone was like, oh my God, they got the thickest accents.
Yeah.
Because the one guy was more German, the other guy was more French.
Yeah, he was French.
So Rob was German and this other guy, Fab, was French. So they were these beautiful, you know, interesting looking, because they had these long hair and they danced
had
in such a way that it was infectious. It was amazing. And it's just interesting that they kept this lie.
Mm.
They had to live up to it. They were the only people to lip sync at the Grammys where no one famously ever did. They were, according to their story, which is this film, they were trying to be singers. They wanted to be on it. They didn't want to be in on the
right
thing. They thought this could be a launch platform to then record more themselves, but this producer never quite let it happen, and then eventually it bottomed out.
It's interesting because, like, when I saw that movie was coming out, me and Kira were like, no, but we saw this last year. So we watched the documentary called Milli Vanilli. That was on Paramount Plus. So I just checked now. It's not available locally streaming-wise. So if you have... Yeah, anyway.
No, but that's good.
They're definitely not telling you to use a VPN. Don't do that. But don't use a VPN to log into Paramount Plus.
So
if it doesn't exist in South Africa, head out into the seas.
So... Also, like, fascinating, like, because I had always known about Milli Vanilli through literally just the pop culture I grew up with growing up. Like, TV shows would make fun of it, you know, like, you would VH1 the story behind, you know, like, stuff like that would pop up. So, The documentary is really good as well because they talk to the people who were the actual singers on the record. They talk to Fab, who's still alive.
Yeah, and so like the other guy, Rob Cole, couldn't handle that breakdown.
Yeah.
So he lost his money, drugs, was an addict, went into jail at one point, and then overdosed.
Yeah, so like...
So only one member
so it's quite tragic.
It is, yeah. So the documentary is really like also fascinating because they remind you of how big they were and what a big scandal it was when it happened. Because the rumors of them being lip singers were... like it was around like in the early days because like you know Russ said that when people heard them speak they had the thickest accents,
right?
So Fab had the thickest French accent and Rob had the thickest German accent, and people were like their tone doesn't sound anything like they would sound on the record singing. And the documentary talks to the guys who were the actual voices, and the crazy thing is I don't know if they do it in the movie, but after that scandal happened, because there was a big falling out with them and the record producer, so they wanted out of the contract because he was like exploiting them. And the documentary does a good job in showing how exploitative the music industry is, right?
Yeah, that also comes through in the film.
Yeah, and this guy, so crazy thing. Boney M, right? Also, that singer lip synced. And voice on those songs where he's like, you know, Boney M, that's the record producer's voice.
Well, like, he's such a man from Russia.
They used his voice on the
audio. No ways.
So, like, it came out that they also lip-synced, and he was, like, behind that as well, which is nuts. And then, like, later on, when the scandal happened, he had the audacity to release the real Milli Vanilli, that was the name of the band, and was the actual... like people who were behind Milli Vanilli singing, but then they had the audacity to still have fake people in that because it didn't suit the look of the new Milli Vanilli. Like, it's just mind-blowing.
So he didn't learn his lesson at all.
No, well, it's just one of those things where you just got a sense of how the whole story, and especially this film, does give you an idea of just how fabricated
it's
the whole thing is. Yeah. And there's this great moment where, you know, they don't want to lip sync, and then one guy says to the other one, "No, but you know, people lip sync all the time," and they're like, "But they're lip syncing to their own voices."
Exactly.
The difference is we're not lip syncing to our own voices; we're lip syncing to someone else's voice.
And the great thing about the documentary, before we move on, is that it's a great redemption piece as well for Fab in particular, because this poor guy has been living with the shame all his life. Like, he talks about how he met his wife, and he had to like be like, "I was in Milli Vanilli," and
she was like, "I was that guy."
Yeah, and like, it's nice to see that this movie, there's eventually, it's not all doom and gloom, you know. Like, this guy,
girl, you
comes
know,
out on the other end. You know?
Girl, You Know It's True is out in cinemas now, and I'm sure it'll make its way onto other streaming platforms. Wow. But it is also redemptive. You do leave it going like, "Okay, I get it." Like, it's not great, but like, I get it.
Yeah.
I'm saying it's not great as in like the fact that you lied and deceived people, but I get where you were perhaps coming from and how you were sort of caught up in it.
Yeah.
You get a sense of what
you feel bad for them.
Of what the 80s and the 90s were, where these two model dudes, they were basically immigrants.
Yeah.
Because Rob was this orphan kid that was adopted by these German parents. They didn't have money. They struggled. And so this was a chance. It was a lifeline. And it was, you know, there was a moment where something as innocent as them discovering sushi for the first time, you know, only happened once
das
they were
wunderbar.
Famous.
Yeah.
And you do feel sorry for them. But there's this great moment in the film. I actually think I was a bit taken off by the choice, but then I later came to really appreciate it. They sort of end the documentary. Sorry, it's not a documentary. They talk to the camera.
Yeah.
In Girl, You Know It's True. They sort of go, "Oh, I guess you're wondering how we ended up here." And so they sort of talk to you. Yeah. It's quite an interesting choice.
Yeah.
And at the end, they say something like, "You know, now it's all done and it's sad, but let's not be sad. I know what you want. Let's give it to you one more time." And they like actually get up and then sing.
Oh, that's cool.
And dance as if you're watching a musical. You know, at the end of Mamma Mia, for example, the story ends and then it's like, "Let's do a medley."
Yeah.
You know, let's give you one more little go, you know. Yeah, so it was smart in that sense. And it had me Google them. It had me, I wanted to see, because there was a very famous moment when they were on tour and the record skipped.
Yes, yeah.
literally on, girl, you know it's girl, you yeah. know it's girl, like, you know it's girl, you know yeah. it's, and then they like ran off stage.
Yeah.
Which is where the whole illusion started to crack.
Yeah.
Shit.
But once again, it is okay to lip sync.
Yeah.
If it's your own voice. The difference is this wasn't their voice.
Yeah. Yes.
But I went to YouTube and was like, I wanted to see that moment yeah. in real life with the actual dudes.
Yeah.
So
it's crazy, man.
We've had Leon Fanier up on the show. He's the famous South African film critic. Mm. His big one, which we've said many times, is did the film leave a lasting impression on you? Were you a different person yeah. or did it leave you cold? That's your measure of a film.
Yeah.
And as I said, because it's not a little hammy acting, a little too like...
Very this is, Hallmark-y. Yeah.
Yeah, well, because this film was told by them, you know, they have the ability to make themselves seem better or cooler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you sort of got the sense that you were being a bit persuaded. But the rest of the weekend had me listen to their music, Google, watch stuff. And yeah. I was like, that makes this good.
Yeah, no, that's what you want. Like, you want audiences looking up on the stuff, you know, where like it's they...
And thinking about Milli Vanilli and just going yeah. back on it and going, Jesus, that was insane.
Yeah, it's
we probably have been deceived
yeah.
100 times
it's,
similar.
It's the whole idea of them, their literal industry plant, you know,
yeah.
where they're
yeah.
like, oh, this is what the kids want. These two... exotic men, you know, dancing to hip hop, singing songs. They got a cool look, and they people ate it up.
Well, the success was also that the music was that good.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I was talking earlier about that baby, yeah. don't forget my number, ba 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 ba, baby. It's an earworm. This is like the yeah. Roxette era. Because
yeah,
at one
yeah.
point in the film, they even were like in competition with Roxette.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
also was like a manufactured idea, right?
Yeah.
This, you know, these Swedish
yeah.
songwriters sort of go into the rest of the world. They could also hardly speak any English,
yeah.
but they can pump out these like amazing
yeah,
Western
yeah.
you
yeah.
know, English songs. It's
yeah.
very interesting. Okay, so I liked Girl You Know It's True in the sense of the story.
Yeah, you were captivated for sure.
You know,
yeah.
it did stop my world for a sec, you know, I was able to digest what was going on. So it is good in that regard.
Good, man. When's it coming out?
It's out. It's in cinemas.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's going to get lost. You can see these smaller films will get a bit lost. And so that's why it is nice to talk about it. It is
yes.
nice to tell people about Milli Vanilli because
yeah.
with every year that goes by, if this wasn't on your radar, you might not know that they even
no, exactly.
existed
Same
as
thing.
As a concept.
That's me.
Another one I want to talk about, which is now coming up, is Fly Me to the Moon, which I got
is
a chance.
Is it about Frank Sinatra?
No. It is about the moon landings.
Oh, okay, cool. That's cool.
And now, do you not know about...
this was part of the terrible trend of music biopics being named after the biggest
yeah,
hit.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly, like, exactly. Yeah, which okay. is... Which
just want to dance with somebody. What was the Whitney Houston one?
I think it was that.
Right.
Yeah.
Fucking awful.
That's a dumb
stupid
name.
Stupid producers. Dude, most music biopics annoy the shit out of me.
Yeah, except for Rocket Man. It's the best one.
Yeah, well, so Bohemian okay. Rhapsody yeah. and Rocket Man... Sure, but they're
Bohemian Rhapsody is a yeah. fucking tragedy.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that they all chose this formula. And
yeah.
so a Milli Vanilli biopic kind of had to do the same thing.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting that they chose the song that not only was their biggest, but it had words like true in it.
Cool. Yes.
You know it's true. It's
very good.
That's actually a smart
name. But Fly Me to the Moon is a big ass movie with Channing Tatum
yeah,
and Scarlett
and
Johansson
Scarja, yeah.
that is coming out
Whoa.
Soon in the next week or two. It's
oh, shit.
We are at the Bioscope. We're going to take it in its second week. I think it starts then on the 12th.
Okay.
Around the world. We're going to do it a week later. So our screenings start on the 16th.
Yeah.
It is about the moon landings.
Okay.
Channing Tatum is the project leader of the Apollo missions, you know,
okay.
the guy like
yeah, yeah,
with
yeah.
the headset in Buzz those cut. Big rooms
yeah.
In the Florida section. Because, you know, the space missions had two operations.
Yeah.
They had Florida, where the rockets took off.
Yeah.
And then they had Houston, which was perfectly positioned to then track.
Yeah, yeah.
So this wasn't in Houston. This was in Florida, where the rockets actually took off. So they were involved in the manufacturing and the testing of these rockets. But at this point where in the 60s, the president, FDR, I think this was who was the guy that was
no
shot?
Ways.
JFK.
JFK.
Oh, right.
JFK had said, we're going to put a man on the moon before the end of the decade.
Yeah.
But Vietnam's happening, so it's a very unpopular time to spend millions on like something as silly as space travel.
Yeah.
But they realize that they need to drum up more public love for these missions. So they bring in Scarlett Johansson, who's like this marketing whiz, who understands that you got to get America behind it. So that's where Wheaties sponsored the astronauts and Rolex, you know, became brand ambassadors. And also, once again, about deceiving the public. Mm. She's like, because Channing Tatum then has to sort of deal with her kind of coming in and kind of upsetting his mission. But she's got a very important job. She's raising the money that's going to fund his mission. But he's like, we can't wear, you know, Rolexes in space. She's like, you're not going to. It's just the illusion that these astronauts wear
marketing,
Rolexes in space.
Yes,
and of course, there's a little bit of chemistry. But then what happens, and this is interesting because it also comes out in the trailer, Woody Harrelson is like a from the top government person who brings her in to help drum up this. And it's fun and it's happy and it's cool. And, you know, we're getting the moon mission going. He then says, I need you to film a fake moon landing in case the real one doesn't happen.
Get me Kubrick on the line.
Well, they joke about that.
Oh, really?
They do. They joke about that. She says, we should have gotten Kubrick.
Yeah.
And so they secretively to Channing Tatum, she sets up this fake moon landing. Mm. And I don't want to give more away, but they play
sounds
with that
fun,
and it's
man.
Fun.
Yeah.
It ticks all the boxes. It's fun. It's quite smart. It's quite witty.
Oh, and like it's the director of Love, Simon.
Oh, I love
Greg
Love, Simon.
Love, Simon's a magical movie,
what's Love,
dude.
Simon?
Love, Simon.
So
it's so special, dude. Oh, my God.
Okay.
You tell him, Baron.
So Love, Simon is about... No, I'm vaguely remembering this now, but I loved Love, Simon.
You just know you loved it.
No. So, okay. So he's writing a letter. Or
he's receiving letters from a Simon.
Yes.
And he's in the closet.
Yes.
This young boy in high school.
Okay.
He's receiving SMSs or whatever from someone named Simon and just connecting with Simon.
But does he know who Simon is?
No. Doesn't know who Simon is. Simon's this mystery person in his school.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to reveal himself because they're both in the closet.
Okay.
And it is the most wholesome fucking
it's
love
really
story
sweet.
You've ever seen in your life.
Did you watch Love,
the series?
Victor?
No.
It was also wholesome, but then it fizzled out a little.
Oh,
but,
no.
Yeah, it was also the same vibe. That character, the guy who plays, you know, he comes in later.
Oh, okay.
But like for like a cameo.
Okay.
But it's got a very cheesy, the opening credits sequence is very like... mid-early 2000s Disney
high school
show. Yeah, it's weird. Like, I'm like, where's this coming from?
This is something else now.
Oh, Love, Victor's on Disney Plus.
So it's a series based on the movie.
Yeah,
basically.
It's a spin-off.
It's a series spin-off.
Yeah.
Okay, I was about to say, okay, so Love, Victor is on Disney Plus.
Yeah, so
Is Love, Simon anywhere?
I'm not too sure. I wouldn't be surprised
I think
if it's on
Netflix.
Disney. Yeah, so Love, Victor takes place in the same universe as Love, Simon. Like, it takes place, like... After Love, Simon, and Love, Simon in this world happened, and he's like, you know, so he's going with that vibe as well.
Lovely.
So Greg Berlanti is the director of Fly Me to the Moon. I'm definitely watching it now.
Yeah, sounds like fun.
It's great, and it is a nice cinema movie.
Sounds like a good date movie.
It's a perfect date movie because there is something for the guy in the sense that it's like rocket ships and moon landings and astronauts and space. We all fucking loved space at one point. You know, it's like space and dinosaurs were like the sort of two big boy loves. I remember reading books about space.
Same.
Yeah,
it was like deep.
Space is cool.
It's deep in our like core as dudes, right?
Scarlett Johansson's marketing worked.
Totally. Yeah. No, exactly. Yeah. She, you know, it's very indulgent. I don't know how much of this was ever true, but it's great. It is an Apple TV Plus movie, so it will come to Apple TV at some point. But take the cinema window, not only because it's showing at the Bioscope, but because it is a nice movie to watch on a big scale with big rockets and moon landings. But it will eventually come to Apple TV Plus.
Just a quick little recommendation.
Yes.
Did you guys watch Apollo 10 and a half?
No.
Richard Linklater.
Yeah, G-Force told us about
it
a while ago.
So great. So It's a fun little movie. It's rotoscoped animation style, so like Waking Life, Scanner Darkly.
Yes.
So it follows. It's set in Austin, Texas, as you normally would with a Richard Linklater movie, and Glenn Powell's in it as well. Anyways, it's about a little kid who, over his summer holidays, the space people, while they're getting ready to go to the moon, they start training a kid to go before them.
Yeah.
To like go to space before them. So like they start training this kid.
Because they need a little kid because it needs to be a little human.
Yeah. So like they're like almost like he's like a test chimp.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
So like they're prepping him in case like, so like the whole of premise of the movie is this kid is telling the story about how he was actually the first one to go.
But it's sort
it's
of
like
a little,
so fun. Yeah.
It's a little it's meant to be a bit autobiographical. It's meant to be Linklater when he's a kid.
Yeah.
It's like his fantasy of sort of what his childhood could be or what he wanted it to be. And it's lovely. So Linklater, we've spoken about him.
Yeah.
In the back, arguably one of the greatest filmmakers of all time.
Awesome. Yeah.
I love how he doesn't have the front and center-ness of a Spielberg or a Scorsese, because he maybe doesn't have a definitive look, or maybe he shies away from doing
cool
stuff. But when you look at what work he's done, he's consistently been incredible.
He makes my favorite hangout movies.
Yeah, because I think the films he makes aren't necessarily these huge Hollywood blockbusters, they are very loved. Like Before Sunrise, which is also a hangout movie. It is a hangout movie.
Well, Thor Trilogy is a hangout
they
movie.
They just spend these beautiful sort of moments together hanging out, Dazed and Confused, and then most recently Hitman, which, you know, you wonder why some of these movies do so well and are so good, and you're like, oh, it's because a smart person's behind it. It's the same as School of Rock.
Yeah.
Why does School of Rock stand out as being the special cult hit in amongst Jack Black's other stuff, and it's because Linklater wrote it and directed it.
He didn't write it.
Oh, sorry, but I mean,
I think he may have written part of it, but his roommate was the writer.
Yeah. Well, so from Mark this White, sort of shared White Lotus, you know, brain.
Sorry, that was such a him. He didn't write it.
No, thank you. No, it's good. That's why you're the fact
checker. Yeah, so Apollo 10 and a Half is on Netflix. Check it out. But, Cole, you wanted to talk about The Bear.
Okay, so this is being directed at Russell, because since this podcast has started, I've talked about The Bear Season 1 when it released.
Yeah.
Talked about The Bear Season 2 when it released. Now it's time for The Bear Season 3, and Russell hasn't watched any of them.
You haven't watched any of them?
I've watched a little bit of Season 1.
It's so good.
I totally get and understand why it's amazing.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that it's there.
Yeah.
I personally don't necessarily want that level of anxiety and intensity at 8:30, 9:00 at night.
You don't want Calm screaming at you to get the fuck out of my kitchen.
I totally get how good it is. Chef.
Sorry, Chef.
I really, really get it. I just feel
that's
like
a very tense show.
At
Jesus.
The moment, my days and my life are nice and fulfilled and intense. I want to unwind a little.
Nah, see, this is my problem. Yeah. I can be the most stressed out ever or depressed or whatever.
Yeah, I'm the same.
And then watching really good cinema, even if it is stressful, even if it is like horrifying, it's the way I fill my cup.
No, I 100% agree.
Yeah, like, it doesn't like make me stressed.
Like
the way I fill my cup.
Because I've noticed that trend where like Russ is like, I watched a lovely sweet tea movie. He's like, I watched Mrs. Piddlywinks and the Sunshine Boys. It's so lovely.
It's we're like, I watch Sailor 120 Days of Sodom.
For fuck's sake.
Well, a lot of it is influenced by who's sitting next to me on the couch.
Yeah.
And we can also only digest and watch so much together.
Yeah.
Because you don't live with Kira all day, every day, right?
Yeah, no. So when we do see each other, I have to like pick my... I either have to pick something that's more in line with what she feels like, because she's not into the intense stuff.
That's it, guy.
Yeah.
You're just describing what every dude in a relationship has to deal with.
But then there's times I'm like, oh, let's watch this movie. And then like she's like, why the fuck did you pick that? That was the most miserable movie ever. I'm like, but it's so good. But like,
we're compromised in that sense.
Yeah.
Cole, you also sometimes go between you and Michael, right?
Yeah, I'm not allowed to watch anything nothing serious around Michael.
Oh, God.
I forced him to come here to watch Old Boy, and he gave it half a star on Letterboxd.
Oh, Jesus.
He's like, I didn't want to watch fucking incest tonight, Cole. Thank you.
And I was like, so much more than
that. And then well, I said to him, Russ gave me the poster. Russ gave me the poster, well, yeah. poster, and I was like, when we move in together, can I put this in our apartment? He's like, no. I'm like, no, I want an Old Boy poster on my wall, dude.
Well, some
boys only want one thing, and it's fucking disgusting. The Old Boy poster in the apartment.
It's gross.
Yeah.
Something we did watch together that I thought was interesting is a documentary called Black Barbie.
Oh, yeah. Which it's is on Netflix. Netflix. Yeah.
So this is Shonda Rhimes.
I love Shonda Rhimes, yeah.
Who is the creative executive producer behind some of the most influential and amazing TV we've ever had.
Yeah.
Grey's Anatomy and all sorts of
Shonda Rhimes, I'm thinking of something else. Yeah,
She's then also behind Bridgerton. So there is an agenda of pushing the representation of black people in mainstream,
I get you,
mainstream TV, which is really great and important. And Black Barbie is the history of the Black Barbie.
Yeah, the first Black Barbie. Yeah.
But not just as simple as that, because there was a point where the documentary spoke and addressed about things, you know, its main chief topic and argument in the first 10 minutes. And then I turned to Leslie, I'm like, what is the rest of this fucking movie going to be about? We've got it, right?
Yeah.
But it's about politics, representation.
Yeah, it's important. It's like representation.
And just the industry behind these things and how toys work and how they're influenced. And it's lovely. And so I want to talk about one little thing that I think is interesting that came up.
Yeah.
Which was this point where it was called the Clark tests.
Okay.
The psychological test that was done with kids about their relationship with dolls.
Yeah.
And it basically got revealed that black kids didn't like the black dolls. They thought the black dolls were bad and that the white dolls were better. And it revealed this quite depressing sense of self-worth in young kids, young black kids. And it set a course which helped change it, where beautiful companies existed that made these beautiful black dolls that were something for black kids.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to also see what the status of being the Barbie meant. And this is what I wanted to chat about. There was such a smart decision to really push the idea in the Barbie movie that that all those women were Barbie.
Yeah.
It wasn't Barbie and her friends.
Yeah.
They were all Barbie. Like, all the guys were Ken, whether you were the black Ken or the white Ken or whatever.
That
really got drummed home in the concept of the movie that they made with Margot Robbie and all of them. I'm talking about the Barbie movie.
Yeah.
Because only when you see the politics behind the Barbie dolls and the black Barbie doll is that they made black characters that were Barbie's friends, and the black commentators throughout this documentary were like, that's cool, but she wasn't Barbie.
Yeah.
Sure. She was this other character with this other name.
They were the token black
characters. They were the friend. Yeah. So that it took decades before there was like a Barbie that was actually called Barbie that was black.
Yeah. That's wild, eh?
And it was very interesting. And also it was about who in Mattel were designing the clothes
who got to design
the clothes. And so it was a black woman that designed the uniform of the black Barbie. It's great. It's a good watch. It's a smart watch.
It's on my next up.
It's an easy watch in that sense. And it just cracks open parts of your brain. And so
what is it on?
Netflix. Okay, so it's called Black Barbie.
Okay.
And this documentary, this as well, Subjective Voice, was about a particular... It was sort of throughout the film, it was the voice of the filmmaker. So she really puts herself in because she had an aunt or she had a family member who was involved in Mattel that was on the assembly line that got given the chance to encourage them to make the black dolls.
Sure.
And so that's what set this film in motion. And it was done over the course of decades. This filmmaker has made this film. So it's pumped, this is a little earlier to what we were talking about, this idea of authenticity. It was it was pumped full of a true and beautiful voice.
Yeah.
And regardless of whether you've made the best edit or the best cuts or the best structuring, if you've got this authentic voice that comes through and you can see the years and years and years that it's taken to make this documentary, you come to love and appreciate it.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, we've just done 10 days of encounters at the Bioscope here. So it's like you see the power of documentary and you see what they've done.
Yeah, it's
and
important.
Like, and all the different shapes and forms that documentary come in, they're a hell of an important. You know, the biggest one of which was Black People Don't Get Depressed, which was our guest 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
Is that coming back?
So we'll
great title.
We'll do it. We'll do it in some shape or form. I chatted to Sara over the weekend. We had 2 sold-out screenings of her film at the Bioscope.
Mm.
And it was amazing. So lovely. And we were just talking about, we can screen this to schools. We can do more. Oh, it's lovely.
Yeah.
So it'll come back in some shape, but I don't know when or how just yet, but we'll do it.
Yeah.
That's great.
Is there anything else that guys want to chat about in substance?
It's interesting that you're talking about, you know, representation and stuff like that, how important that is, right? So one movie that I watched like 2 weeks ago that I haven't been able to get out of my head, it's one of the few 5 out of 5s I've given this year.
Ooh.
And a very polarizing filmmaker. It's called I Saw the TV Glow.
I've heard about this.
So Jane Schoenbrunn, I don't know if that's how you pronounce their name, but this film, so I didn't like their previous film, which is called We're All Going to the World's Fair, right? It's like a mostly drama with horror, it's horror adjacent, right?
Okay.
And it's about a lonely kid who makes a friend online through like a YouTube channel.
This is the World's Fair film.
Yeah. So that came out like 2 years ago and that was a big hit at Sundance.
It was a big hit at festival.
Yeah. And, but it's very, the thing is, I just didn't enjoy it. I found it boring. The concept was interesting because it really showcased what a lonely child and goes through, you know, like representative film. Like I know a lot of people who watched it who really connected with it because they felt seen. They were like, this was me in the 2000s, you know. I'm lonely, my YouTube channel only has 5 views and like 2 subscribers, you know what I mean? Like one
and
of those.
So what was that film called?
We're All Going to the World's Fair, right?
Okay.
Very interesting film. Best way to watch it is on your laptop because it like it feels like you're there with this character, right?
Okay.
But now I Saw the TV Glow, which is Jane Schoenbrunn's follow-up. It's A24. It's got a nice polish to it, you know. Like it looks nicer. It's got a good cast. It fucking blew my socks off.
What's it about?
So basically, the concept of it is there's this lonely teenager, who meets another lonely teenager, and they bond over a TV show called The Pink Opaque. It's set in the 90s. And The Pink Opaque is a very cheesy, like Buffy the Vampire kind of show, you know?
Cool, yeah.
But they connect to these characters and they start to, their identities start to come about by watching this show. So their gender identity and their sexual identity. So one character, the whole movie is basically a...
Coming of age?
Yeah, it's a coming of age movie, but it's an allegory for trans identity and queer identity, right?
Okay.
So this film, I mean, and it's coded everywhere through color palette, through the shot designs, through the way characters talk. And it is just one of the best examples of loneliness I've seen on film, especially amongst young people.
Mm.
And also the confusion of trying to fucking figure yourself out. And
what do you mean by coded?
It's like, how did I say it?
You sort of said through the color and through the choice, it was coded.
Oh, very queer coded.
What does that mean?
So queer coded comes from the haze. What is that law called in Hollywood? That's
the haze.
Yeah, basically it prevented. We've spoken about it before, where gay people weren't allowed to be featured in movies in any shape or form.
Yeah.
So for all that time, this language of cinema became developed that's called like queer or gay coding, yeah. right? It's where you would put in symbols and colors and things
it's
that
like
allude to
metaphors and allegories and stuff like that.
It's like a silly example is Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah.
And at the end of the film, Elio is wearing a striped shirt that's in the colors of the bisexual flag.
Yeah. So,
so it's like you're not going to know that unless you are.
There's a sequence in this movie where there's like this like big tent that the character's walking under, and the colors are of the trans flag, right?
So,
right.
So it's kind of two things, right? For the people that know what they're looking for, they'll see the signs of what they're looking for. But for the people that are completely oblivious, they're almost getting a bit of subliminal messaging.
Yeah, yeah, 100%, right? Yes, so exactly. Like, it's those kinds of movies work best when you rewatch it, because once you figure out what it's about, you're like, holy shit, it all makes sense now, right?
Mm.
So this movie, like, when you know it's there, it's like obvious. It's not hidden, like,
because everything has to be picked.
Yeah,
you know, someone has to pick out what color shirt this character is going to wear. Every and you know, people know this, but some people maybe don't know this. But down to the color of the things on the shelf behind them, every single thing is obviously thought through.
There's a discussion behind every single object.
Yeah, and especially if you've got a bit more budget, you've got the time, you've got the departments to put this thing through.
Yeah, that's what like this film is like one of the most thoughtful. And so Jane Shinran, like I said, they're a very polarizing filmmaker. People either love their films or like hate it, right? And I didn't like their first film, and this film just I can't stop thinking about it. You know,
where did you have to get it?
So it's on VOD via America and stuff. It was via VPNs, right?
I saw the TV glow.
It's incredible. It's also like a really great film that a lot of us, I know
it features Justice Smith.
Yeah. And it's just heartbreaking, dude. Like,
it's Pikachu.
Yeah.
Oh, that guy.
Jurassic World.
Yeah, yeah. So
Fallen Kingdom.
It's just such a heartbreaking movie because you're seeing these characters really battle with who they know they are to be, but they're still hiding it. You know what I mean? There's such a fucking great monologue in the movie later where I'm not giving anything away, but the female character is talking to him about like how she literally went through hell to figure out who she is.
Yeah.
And it's also, it's a horror drama, mostly drama. The soundtrack is phenomenal.
Okay.
It's just, it, by the time I got to the end, I was finished. Like I was fucking, really like, it's one of those films where you just can't stop thinking about it. And I haven't gotten it out of my head in like the past 2 weeks, like anything
that passes the Leon Fanierop test.
Let's call it the Fanierop test.
And that's the thing, though. Like, it's one of those films where I've seen people either resonated with it or hated it. Like, oh, I thought it was boring.
Yeah, it's got a 3.6 on Letterboxd, so it feels like it's middle of the road.
It's a that's what good art is when it's polarizing. You know what I mean? Like, you want
it shouldn't be something for everyone.
Oh. Yeah, yeah.
David Ehrlich gave it 4.5.
Yeah, but. Yeah, David Ehrlich is a notorious wet blanket.
Like, I'm just saying, like, if he likes it,
interesting. If he likes it, we must hate it. Okay, sorry. Cool. Anyways.
Yeah.
Lovely, guys. No, I think it's just, it's interesting that you go out to do these intense, harrowing sessions. I go out to, you know,
watch Lady Pigleton. And
no, but listen, I do love a good film in that sense, and I really do appreciate and love those kinds of films.
Yeah.
I do want that to happen.
Mm.
But you tend to sometimes avoid them when
100%. Kira would agree with you 100%. Yeah. Where she's like, I don't want to be sad when I'm watching a movie. Like,
but if it catches you by surprise, I'm all for it. Like
Paddington 2. Paddington 2. Yeah.
Yeah, lovely, guys. Yeah, Paddington in Peru is coming on its way.
So excited.
I can't wait for my eyes to piss tears.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There's another one that looks kind of interesting. It's going to be a dumb Christmas movie, but I just find it an interesting example of where a Christmas movie is in 2024. And that's with, it's called Red One.
Yeah, with The Rock, right?
Yeah, with The Rock, who's like the sort of Secret Service manager of Father Christmas, who's played by J.K. Simmons, who looks like hardcore gym-toting, like, you know, hardcore dude.
Yeah.
Like what Bezos is now. And he gets kidnapped or something. And so it turns into this like big Fast and the Furious-y heist movie, but it's a Christmas movie.
I saw someone complaining about that on Threads, and they were saying this movie cost $250 million.
Oh, that's like, disgusting.
Yeah,
sure. Hectic.
Yeah. No, let them spend their money.
Yeah.
It's their money. Here looks interesting, which is the Robert Zemeckis
film.
We got a trailer for that, which is Zemeckis is the guy behind fucking Back to the Future and Forrest Gump and
One shot, technically, that's what
looks interesting. So we've spoken about him on the show before, and Graham was good to point out that he's always very open to trying new technology. So he made, like, was it Beowulf? Or he made
he was trying to do the CG thing,
and he did the Polar Express.
Polar Express.
You know, but it was him taking a swing,
fucking Pinocchio,
because he kind of could, right? Jesus. So there's that, and so we're using AI de-aging on Tom Hanks.
Yeah, they're making teenagers.
And Robin Wright.
And Robin Wright. Weird. So this is the director of Forrest Gump with Forrest and Jenny.
Yeah.
Back again.
I thought you were going to say with Forrest and Gump.
And
Forrest is, that's a good point. It's Forrest and Jenny together.
Exactly.
Jenny.
I might not be the smartest man, but I know what love is.
Yeah.
The trailer sort of almost alludes to the fact that this camera is not going to change position, and we are going to go through almost the history of the world, from dinosaurs to civilization how it ends up being that at this very point there is a house that Tom Hanks lives in and raises kids with, and then the trailer ends with them as old folk going back to this house. So it's almost like it's set in this one place.
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't know if you watched The Ghost Story by David Lowery. I know you don't like David Lowery.
Who's David Lowery?
He did the Peter Pan recent movie.
Oh, no,
he did the Green Knight.
Yeah, I don't like Green Knights and I hate Peter Pan.
he did a movie called The Ghost Story with Casey Affleck and Rooney Mara. And that movie was partly inspired by the graphic novel that this movie is based on.
Okay, so this is a...
And it does the same thing. It goes through the history of time and then they arrive at this point in time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's not one shot like that. That's amazing.
This looks interesting. So it's called Here.
Yeah.
And it's going to come out in November.
It's that soon. Jeepers.
Yeah. No, it's on its way. It's November is soon, bro.
Yeah.
It was always... November was always a very long time away.
Yeah.
And it's soon. And why I'm saying November in particular, because that's when I'm getting married.
Hey.
So it's like what was always quite a while away is now
it's lucky on your door, bro.
It's now pretty close.
Are you going to have a horror and break a few bones?
We should,
Or just
smash some plates. Just bring in all the culture.
Yeah, just appropriate everything.
Yeah, literally like mosh pit, horror, tomato, you might as well just do it.
The floor. Just imagine telling everyone, you guys go on that side. You guys go on that side, and then run at each other.
Wall of death,
What a way to start a first episode.
Funny. Lovely, dudes. Thanks for a lack of chat. Thanks for a lack of morning.
Yeah.
And thank you for listening thus far. We are going to have ourselves a guest episode this week, as we mentioned. So tune in on Thursday for the guys from Duis Wine, who are also filmmakers. Brian and Asher are going to pop in for a very fun chat on Thursday.
Oh, yeah.
And then also, as mentioned, we are going to take a break just for 1 week because, as I mentioned, I am traveling. So I'm going to be away. So just for one week.
Cool. So we get time off. We can stay at home and not open the video store.
Hey? Yes. Okay, just for one week.
Sick.
And then we'll be back. Okay. Our home base is thevideostore.co.za, and so you can see links to all the social media. Please chime in. Let us know what you think about what we've spoken about, or if there's something that we haven't spoken about that we should, and of course links to previous episodes. We'll see you again on Thursday. Cheers, guys.
See you then.
Bye-bye. What was that? Oh, sorry. Bye.